what did happen? Okay. See, we did crash. It was on this crazy island. And we waited for rescue, and there wasn't a rescue. And then there was a smoke monster. And then there were other people on the island. We called them the others. And they started attacking us. And we found some hatches, and there was a button you had to push every 180 minutes, or... Well, I was never really clear on that. But the others didn't have anything to do with the hatches. That was the Darmanish. They were all dead. The others killed them. And now they're trying to kill us. And then we teamed up with the others because some worse people were coming on a freighter. Desmond's girlfriend's father sent them to kill us. So we stole their helicopter, and we flew it to their freighter, but it blew up. And we couldn't go back to the island because it disappeared. So then we crashed in the ocean, and we floated there for a while until a boat came and picked us up. And by then, there were six of us. That part was true.
I came on a plane.
What plane?
A Jira Flight 316. And that's how I returned to the island.
So, why him?
What was it that was so wrong with me? What about me?
What about you?
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 6, Episode 14, The Candidate. And I have a lighthearted question for this episode. What board game do you donate to Sun Palms Nursing Home? Didn't seem like they had a lot of board games there. My name's Dave Gonzalez, and I'm donating chutes to hatches and ladders out of submarines.
My name is Jordan Robinson, and in a world where Anthony Cooper is safe and sound somewhere where he can't hurt anyone anymore, I'm going to go with Don't Wake Daddy.
And I'm Neil Miller, and because I think in this scenario I'm probably Jack, which at this point in Lost is okay by me, I would donate Operation just to send that, to further emphasize that message that I'm just here to help John Locke.
Excellent. All good answers, and good job, Joanna, nestling the word wake where I couldn't cut off Neil with my handy sound clip. But don't worry, if this is your first time joining us, welcome. This podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or flashing sideways and visiting the Cork Island for the very first time. That's because each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, we have a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes, which is most of the episodes, and avoids all spoilers. Then there's a second section called The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of an entire series of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. Recently, we've been getting some baller emails in The Storm, so a lot of The Storm has been you, the listeners. Thank you for that. If you want to jump around, maybe you're revisiting this episode, maybe you don't want to get into The Storm, you can look down at your podcasting device and see estimated time codes about where each one of these things starts. Don't worry, The Storm starts with a audio cue, so if you skip ahead, you're not going to accidentally get spoiled for anything, although I can't imagine bigger spoilers than what happened this week's episode. I don't know. For the final season of Lost, we've shifted to releasing the podcast on Saturday evening in the U.S. after our group live watch in our Storm Slack. There's only 1 month left of those. If you want to join, you can go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you will find ways to subscribe to us for a monthly fee. And depending on what level you choose, you get more and more bonus content. When you subscribe for the very first time, you get instant access to our previous years of all that bonus content we've been putting out weekly, which include extra interview bits, bonus podcasts, and various weird oddities. If you also like live watching things in our Storm Slack, which you get access to at the very lowest level, you might want to join Joanna for Feels Like the First Time. I hear we have a great plan for the month of August.
Oh, yes. As if you haven't heard us talk about Marvel enough in all our various beats, I will be watching a few Marvel movies with Kristen Russo, and sort of the idea, Dave was helping me out with some movie selection yesterday, and the idea I came up with was like, probably Kristen, on our Feels Like the First Time bonus content that we like to do, might want to watch the gayest Marvel movie. So I came up with a few. I asked Twitter to help me, I asked Dave to help me. And so we have a final list of three movies. Neil Miller, you requested to have the ability to guess what these were. Mm-hmm. So what do you think we picked?
Well, you know, I love to take a good guess.
Yeah.
I'm thinking at least one of them has to be Thor Ragnarok, the omnisexual Marvel movie.
Correct.
Excellent. Let's see. What are the other ones? I would probably say Captain Marvel might be on there.
I would agree with you. We're not doing that one, but I would agree with you. Kristen's already seen that one.
Oh, okay. Let's see. What are the other ones? I mean, probably Winter Soldier.
Correct.
Oh, man. Nailing it.
one let's more. See.
What is the third one? Can't have two Thor movies, although, you know, the other two Thor movies could definitely be up there.
This is also where my answer, I think, differed from the final one, because it's a little bit tough until you hear the last movie contextualized like Joanna's going to contextualize it.
I think that was ready. Steve, how long are you podcasting with me?
Now I'm trying to remember what all the Marvel movies are.
Oh, boy. Can I tell you the answer?
Yeah, just give me the last one. I did so well so far, better than I thought I would.
You did a great job. I asked, and this was the resounding answer, I asked, barring Winter Soldier, Captain Marvel, Thor Ragnarok, because those were already either picked or off the list. You know, what was the gayest movie? I got a lot of answers. This was the top score by far, and it is Captain America Civil War, and here it is described by acclaimed journalist Mark Harris. Two tops have a fight. Their whole circle of friends have to pick a side, and then one of them shows off his new twink, Tom Holland, who isn't really up on all the news, but is living for the drama. Captain America Civil War. A messy, messy breakup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is a good breakup movie. That's for sure.
So there we go. So we're doing Winter Soldier, Civil War, and Thor Ragnarok with Kristen Russo. I think it's going to be fun. I think she's going to have a good time with Bucky and with Tessa Thompson and everything. So there we go. You can listen to that. You know, if you are a subscriber to our Patreon or to the Buffering Patreon, you can follow the latest we're up to, stormpodcast.com. You can email us, host@stormpodcast.com. We've got a couple great emails, and then one like truly just like phenomenal email this week, I think. No offense to the others. And then you can always follow us at Storm Podcast. That's where we put our weekly history poll and stuff like that. You can also send us a review. We did get a couple reviews this week. This first one is from Ricky Tin, 5 stars, and then the like 100 emoji is the title. Nice. It says, been all a right. fan of all the hosts since the Game of Thrones days and follow you on a few of your podcasting journeys. I hopped off the Storm train when you guys started covering Lost since I didn't have the time to commit. I don't remember the last time I watched something with 25 seasons, but the pandemic did gift me wrath loads of times. So I've made the leap of faith. You've completely converted me into a full Lost head. I was 8 when the show started airing. TV felt much more like a weekly ritual back then. And I find it so fun to watch and listen to y'all unpack this beast of a show. Thank you and see you in another lifetime. So that's Ricky. And then
our joints are grinding against each other as I move.
And then someone who has the name, I think it's Purple Haze 8 is what we're going for here. 5 stars. You have to go back. If you know, you just know. And trust me, these folks just get it. Lost has long been my go-to comfort TV. I've got it going in the background when I'm cleaning, crocheting, or just chilling and watching. The show is everything, and this podcast is a true treasure. It's funny and thoughtful, sweet, sarcastic. And again, these three just understand some things are eternal besides Richard Alpert. Thank you for putting this together and sharing it with us. You're the Hurley of Lost Podcasts. Everyone loves you, and if they don't, they can hang with Nikki and Paolo. Thanks.
Wow. And Hurley actually has a Lost podcast. That is great.
Wow, the highest compliment you could give someone to be the Hurley of Lost Podcast.
And to tell their haters that they can go hang with Nikki and Paula. Those jabronis.
And the digital spiders.
All right, so we are going to go now to a couple emails as well. Couple quick follow-ups on our Mjolnir, speaking of Marvel, our Mjolnir worthiness prompt of last week. Aaron wrote into Yes and the Penny suggestion to say, yes, Penny can only lift Mjolnir on Christmas, but it is always Christmas in Penny's heart. So there you go.
I mean, it's definitely always Christmas on Penny's boat. We know that much.
That's true. And then we got another candidate, a good one, I thought, from Jeremiah, or Jay, sorry, who wrote in and said, Jin's dad could hold two Mjolnirs. And love
that's
that.
A good one.
Love that for Jin's dad.
The only good dad in the whole.
That's it.
We're really close to being able to say in the whole series. We're real close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So the next two emails that we have are about Sun and Jin. Do you want me to hold them until we're sort of like in the discussion of the episode, Dave?
Yeah. Okay. Why not? That way we could allow our proper feelings to spread into the episode and not get too angry around it, I feel. Right?
We'll see.
Oh, well, maybe we'll just dissipate the anger like a cloud.
Oh, in that case, Neil, why don't you get us good and angry by telling us what happened on Lost this week?
Sure, sure. Well, should we mention that who's hosting the live launch next week?
It's true. It's Neil. Neil's going to be here next week.
I'm not going to. I remember that. I'm going to be there.
For Across the Sea. So that's,
hell yeah.
It's going to be a time we'll be had.
All right, well then before we get all to all that, let's talk about The Candidate, an episode that was written by Elizabeth Sarnoff and Jim Galasso and directed by Jack Bender, if you can believe it. It aired on May 4th, 2010, and it takes place on days 11 and 12 following the arrival of Jira Flight 316, a plane that we actually see in this episode. On the island, everyone wakes up on Hydra Island, and Charles Widmore's gang puts Sawyer and our faithful Flight 815ers back in the bear cages, which, as you know, Sawyer is super excited about that. That is until Smokey and Jack arrive to rescue them. And after they discover that Widmore had plans to blow up the Ajira plane, Locke convinces everyone that they need to go and take the sub and leave the island. As SEAL Team Sawyer takes the sub, Jack pushes Flock into the water and a gunfight breaks out. In the chaos, Kate is shot, and everyone but Flock and Claire make it onto the sub. While the gang makes their escape, they realize that Locke slipped a bomb into Jack's backpack. Oh no. And after they fail to disarm it, Saeed sacrifices himself by running off into a different area of the submarine, and a giant hole is blown in the side of the sub, and everyone begins to sink. As the sub takes on water, everyone scrambles to escape. Hurley saves Kate. Jack saves a concussed Sawyer. But Jin is unable to save Sun, who is pinned to the submarine's hull in the wake of the explosion. Refusing to leave her, Jin drowns alongside his wife, their hands interlocked as they sink to the bottom of the ocean. Sad, sad times. In the flash sideways, Jack tries to convince Mr. Locke to let him fix his original injury. In his search for answers around Locke's past, he visits Bernard, the dentist, and they have a little chat. He then visits Anthony Cooper, who is in a minimally conscious state at this point, having also been involved in some sort of terrible accident. And it's all in search of the reasons why John is so resistant to Jack's help. Along the way, Jack also sees Claire again, and convinces her to come stay with him. After all, they are family. And eventually, we learn why John doesn't want to have Jack fix his back, because his injuries were sustained in a plane crash that also permanently injured his beloved father, a crash for which John feels responsible, as he was the amateur pilot flying the plane for the first time, which, you know, that's a tough way for your first plane flight to go. First and last pilot effort for Joel John Locke. The whole thing ends back on the main island as Hurley, Kate, Jack, and an unconscious Sawyer mourn the loss of Sun and Jin. The man in black sets out to finish what he started, with Claire and her terrible wig still in tow. Fun fact about this episode, I don't know how fun this is, but it is a fact. This is the first episode since the season 4 premiere that all of the surviving main crash survivors, all the people who were in the pilot and have survived this long in the show are together in the same place at the same time. They've been scattered across, you know.
We're back.
Scattered across the island, but they're all back together. This week's calm question is anything but calm. There are three main character deaths in this episode. It's a new record, beating out Exposé by one death. Which of them makes you angriest, Saeed, Sun, or Jin? And I would like to go first.
Great.
Because this one's for my mom, who is still to this day very angry about all the Saeed stuff in season 6. So, you know, Saeed gets like a good, like, he has a good one-liner before he takes off with the bomb. But what a just cheap way for Saeed to go out,
yep.
Is all I'm saying. So let's, Joanna, which of these three rubs you the wrongest way?
It's a toss-up, really, because I'm mad about all of it. But but since you just said Saeed, I'll hop on over to Jin. Jin makes me angry because, as a million people noticed then and will notice now, he and Sun kind of forgot about Chian, their fucking daughter, and like, you know, I guess it wasn't written into the script. But it has to be said that, you know, the way the Sun lines are delivered in that moment, the way she's just saying, go, go, I have to believe that the actress is trying to, like, infuse the Jian into the lack of line where Sun's like, we have a daughter. Let's just not make her
remember
full
the daughter
orphan.
That we were just talking
just
about
talking
before
about.
We got to the submarine.
Just talking about it in our little ring ceremony. Yeah. So Jin, I'm mad about Jin.
Yep. Dave, what do you say?
Well, I think my actual answer is Saeed, but since the only one not taken is Sun, Sun, just because they rolled the dice, they're like, it's time to kill some candidates. Let's trap Sun behind explosive debris in a way that doesn't mangle her legs. Like, let's just take the lazy way out of trapping Sun so that it really feels like Jin should be able to, like, you know, pull those metal things about. I'm going to go with that. That's probably the weakest of our arguments, but they're all bad is what my point is.
You're
it's all bad.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, in case it hasn't been evidenced... I think we're all a little angry at this episode still, which I would say
10 years later, 11
10 years
later.
I know it made those of us that were storm dwellers even angrier last episode, which was the episode where, you know, Jin and Sun finally get to reunite after, I guess, since the beginning of the end at season 4 or some such. With everybody else, and it seems like they even get a moment to catch up here and talk about their daughter, and then the show is done having time for them. And I feel like, especially with some of the other avenues we've been down with some of the other characters, and knowing the shape of season 6 is tapering off towards the finale, we could have maybe gotten here earlier without any major detriment to the storytelling so far. So just to give you guys a peek, who might be just calmies, into what we've been discussing in the storm this season, there are better ways this could have been done, we think. I especially like the idea we had last week in the storm, where it's like, even if Sun has to die because you have to kill off a certain amount of candidates, the utility of having Jin around as somebody who's out for vengeance maybe isn't completely useless for where we're going, rather than just sort of making it, I guess, sort of a faith-based thing here. Because the one thing I do like about this episode's on-island thing is I think Jack actually navigates the two groups pretty well. Like, for once, if they would have listened to Jack, I think he's actually right. I don't think the bomb would have exploded. mostly because in television storytelling, if you have one character posit like that, what the motives of another character is, in this case, Jack positing why Locke wanted to get them all in the same place, I don't think it's something where we need to be questioning the motivations. I think that's the show trying to tell us that Locke's entire plan this entire time was to get them all in the same place and figure out a way for them to kill each other. Joanna, do you feel that's a correct read?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm like, can I talk about the larger, like, we should also premise this in the larger conversation we've been having both in the calm and the storm about, like, what Lost did well representationally for its time and what just feels awful now and maybe then. What's interesting is that I, for three of its remaining characters of color to die in the span of just a few minutes, you know, and it's true that, you know, we still have one woman and one non-white person alive in, or two women, Claire's still alive, technically, in the surviving folks. It's like in our original cast members, I should say, because, you know, Miles is still around there. It's just like the way in which this show has let down its non-white characters the whole time, this is like sort of the most egregious, concentrated version of that. And sort of for what Neil was saying too, because like even if Saeed had to go out here at the end, even if they all had to go out here, if you felt like they had to, there was a better way to do it to give them just like more space and more emotion. Like I got more emotional with like Jack and John talking in the hospital hallway than I did with Sun and Jin, because I was so angry about Sun and Jin. And so like, because it makes no sense for Jin to just like abandon his daughter for Sun and stuff like that. So it just feels frustrating. We did get a good email about that. Please let me know if you want me to read it, but I just should say that like I've been reading these contemporaneous recaps for a while now, and I have my list of who I read, and it's a long list, and all of those people are white. So most of the people who are writing about Lost at the time, at least on like the major outlets and sites, were white.
did they notice?
Mostly male, no. None of them did. Not a single one of them said anything about that. And only one of them was really like, most of them were just like, this is so emotional and upsetting. And only one of them was like, this is pretty fucked up, the way these three characters were dispatched with not enough meat on the bone to make it really feel like their sacrifice meant more than just like, we need to up the stakes. And we have a... Jeff Jensen of Entertainment Weekly got an interview with Lindelof and Cuse about the death, so we'll have some more comments from them about why they did it the way they did it, but it doesn't... I'm not satisfied by it. Anyway, can we... can I read this email? Oh my God.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. This comes from one of our listeners, Eve. And let me find it. Okay. The subject is, I've never seen Across the Sea or The Candidate, or How the Candidate Destroyed My Love of Lost. So Eve writes, hi, host. I wanted to talk about how 2 minutes of television destroyed my love of a show because it laid bare the parts that I had previously whistled past. I love Lost for the mysteries and the fact that it was an extremely diverse show in the mid-2000s. It started with Michael and Walt in season one. Whatever the show was trying to say about Black fatherhood came at the expense of Black motherhood. Then the killings of women and people of color kept mounting, or the repetition of Sun and Jin's gangster and era storyline, or Echo and Saeed having the same childhoods of violence to protect their brothers, or the fact that what had started as a pretty diverse show kept getting whiter. Of all the character additions that had been added to the show and lasted more than a season, Bernard from the Tailies, Desmond and Ben from the Hatch, Juliet and Richard from the Others, and Frank and Miles from the Freighter, the majority of the ones that have survived are white and male, Juliet and Miles being the main exceptions. All of the oxygen Ben and Desmond take up in the later seasons come at the expense of the characters of color. I was prepared to see Saeed died. He'd been a zombie all season. I was about to grab a tissue when Sun got stuck, so my tears turned to shock when Jin chose to die with her. My shock turned to outrage. In a show that handled main character death so well, this felt rushed. This is my breaking point. The only characters of color left were Miles and Hurley, who filled the role of comic relief. I mean, well, we can argue about that. This is Joanna. I felt that characters of color were set dressing and not relevant to the show's endgame. I didn't watch Across the Sea because I was so angry and didn't think I watched. And I don't think I watched the penultimate episode either, though I did come back for the finale. I know that this is a long email, but I want to share my feelings about this. I've never gone back and completed rewatch of Lost until now. I wonder how I'll feel now. and how I'll enjoy Across the Sea thanks to the podcast and never tighten up. So, so we have a chance here at the end for Eve to experience the full experience of the end of Lost and see if like anything sits better with those two other episodes. I don't know that they will. I consider this choice here Lost's biggest sin. What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not only is it one of its biggest sins, but from a storytelling standpoint, one of the things that makes it even more egregious is that, like, we've been talking about characters who have arced out and don't have a lot to do and were then kept around. And it's very easy to see that Jin, at the very least, probably had more to do if he would have stayed alive. And both Sun and Jin, you know, both them reuniting shouldn't have been the end of their arc, right? Like, it should have been, there should have been more to it, more with Ji-Yun. I agree. I think that in this episode, Lost does several of its worst things. You know, I would put Saeed in there, but the Saeed thing is, I don't want to say it's easier because Saeed is, like Eve Seamel said, had been sort of zombified. I mean, the decision to like bring Saeed back wrong was the real bad decision here. So I think these are the two sort of most egregious things that Lost does in its final season. And I don't know. I wonder if now that we're 10 years down the line, the shock of it won't be there as much, but the frustration with the choice, you know, I think that'll always be there. And that's part of Lost legacy to go right alongside all the great stuff that it's done.
Yeah. In a post Red Wedding world, like this is like basically the Red Wedding of Lost, right? But like,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to say that. I'm going to say this is the Bells of Lost. This is
it is
the sin episode.
Sorry. They were going right for the Red Wedding.
Yes.
But right. They wanted to cut everybody's hearts out, but everyone was too
and show that no one's safe. Something like that. But it's like, yeah. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I mean, they hit the mark with Lapidus, who's like, I don't care so much that if he was safe that I don't know if he's safe. You know? So it's like there's some sort of length of expendable characters if they needed to like kill a whole bunch of people off. And we've discussed ways that maybe do like Sun and Jin in like different combinations, but Saeed's always felt wrong. And then just to cluster those three together and to have them be those three particular non-white characters does feel the closest to the Bells, because it feels like we were watching a smarter show than this. And then suddenly it does this and you're like, oh, well, if this is how rushed this is all going, maybe I should not feel like the creators have the hand on the wheel that they thought they did. Because when this was airing, we were still in like, this is all one big perfect thing. They're bringing it to end on their terms. You know, they're giving interviews about how they're, you know, finally wrapping up their story. And usually television doesn't allow these long form stories to like wrap up how they're supposed to. So it's like big dealings. And I think we're still sort of believing the falsity that in television, you want everything planned out. Like, you want them to know where they're going instead of like adapting. And so this really feels like a rug getting pulled out from under you the same way like the ending of Game of Thrones did. I will be interested to see if Eve thinks that Across the Sea is an interesting response to this episode, because Lost definitely commits to this like Game of Thrones committed to the Bells, but I think it does a little bit better to recover by the finale. But it is like, this is a difficult chunk, a difficult and divisive chunk, these three episodes that we're in the middle of.
Can I read Daniel's email?
Yeah.
Which is this is some of the stuff, this is like, it's fun to bring this stuff into the calm, but this is the kind of stuff that we've been doing in the storm for a while, which is sort of like a what if version. You know, how would we have fixed this big eyesore? Black eye, that's what I want to say. The big black eye on the legacy of Lost that happens right here at the end. Daniel writes in, Sun and Jin Alt season 6. I just want to share what I think should have happened to Sun and Jin in season 6, because I'm still not over their deaths and the sidelining of Sun. So early in the season, Sun decides to go to look for Jin. She gets captured by Claire, but they reminisce, bond over motherhood, and talks shit about Jack, and Claire eventually lets Sun free. Sun then runs into the Man in Black and Sawyer and goes to the cave with them, but Sun's having none of the Man in Black's candidate talk and leaves after the Man in Black, after giving the Man in Black a classic Sun slap. Sun eventually then runs into Rose and Bernard. Again, they all reminisce and talk shit about Jack, and Sun sees how happy she could be away from the island's bullshit. Sun and Jen are finally reunited. Frank watches on, smiling but silent, and everything goes down on the sub the same way, except it's Jen who's trapped. After a very tearful goodbye with Jen convincing Sun to leave and take care of their daughter, Sun turns to leave, but suddenly stops, says, fuck this, and summons all her strength to free Jen, and they swim to safety. Sun and Jen tell the rest of the survivors that they're done with the island. Jack tries to convince them to fight, and Sun slaps him. Hurley respects their decision. In the final episode, Sun and Jen help convince Claire to leave. Jen explains that he's also nervous to see his child that doesn't know him, and also brings up the time Claire felt Aaron kick for the first time on the island after eating Jen's fish, because I love a callback. Sun and Jin leave the island and live happily ever after with Ji-Yun, loving the pod as always, and really looking forward to the Across the Sea episode, Daniel. So,
that's great.
That's Daniel's mm-hmm. fanfiction. But I do think some of that's a little extreme, like Sun getting super strength to bend metal to get Jin out of there, but the missed opportunity of Claire and Sun and Jin all connecting with, you know, not, and Kate too, you know, like around this idea of parent, like, don't just forget that they have a child in the moment where it matters most. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. I have sort of been toying with this idea of like, is there a way that they could have still killed Sun and Jin and made it better? And I don't know if there is, like, one or both of them should have lived. And like, you know, my fix for Saeed is easier. Saeed should have just died. Like, they should never have brought him back in the murky water. He was done with his arc.
Yeah.
Saeed could have died. And in a bolder, you know, more, I guess, 10 years later, TV landscape, killing off a huge main character that early in your final season would have been a pretty baller move, right?
Plus, he's still in the flash sideways. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We might have been like a little bit mad, but not as mad as we ultimately are. With like, I mean,
significantly better if they would have just killed Saeed and then brought him back for the sideways. But yeah, I don't know if there's a better version of Lost in which Sun and Jin still die in season 6. Like, one of them, and I think it's that moment where Jin decides to stay, and it's like, I don't know if you would. I get it. It's, you know, they want to be together, but you're right. They just kind of forgot about Ji-Yun.
Which makes Ji-Yun, there's this great thing that I read in one of the recaps about Ji-Yun, like how Ji-Yun was like, oh, Ji-Yun began as a plot device during the period when the show was obsessed with the infertility storyline, then became an inconvenience when Sun had to go looking for her husband. When Kate left Aaron to go find Claire, we at least got a chance to see how much it hurt her to do so. I think that's from Miles McNutt's recap. But, like, this idea that, like, Ji-Yun is, like, and all the stuff with Sun in the Oceanic 6 season with, like, Widmore and Ben and all, it just, like, comes to nothing. It just feels like they're mm-hmm. just, like, well, you know. And they burn through so many fumes by keeping them apart for so long. It's just, like, it's just a real fucking bungle.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's why I think the best version of a Lost sequel is it's all about Ji-Yun going and looking for answers.
There's a lot of kids that could pop up in that Lost sequel,
right? And then it's like the other kids could pop up, but it would mainly be around Ji-Yun trying to get answers for why her parents never came back.
They're even younger than our listener that was 8 when this was watching, because they're like 2 or 3, I guess 3, because, you know, 3 years later.
I mean, I think even if they were to. I think compounding the problem is the fact that this is mostly an episode about Jack and Locke and their relationship in both the main timeline and the sideways. Even if this were a Sun and Jin episode, I still don't think it would have worked for them to both die at the end.
It doesn't work, but it would work better or to not have Saeed and Sun and Jin go out in the space of like, you know, 5 minutes or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Even if Saeed didn't die at the beginning of the season, which I agree with you, he maybe should have, like, kill him last week or something. You know, he's like, he just got a sense of humor back, man. When, like, they wake up on the Hydra and he's like, at least you didn't have to paddle. And I was like, Saeed found his joke.
He's still in there.
Well, see, that's the thing. His reversal, when he learns he's still in there, also isn't on camera because we have to, you know, not know what happened to Desmond and think maybe he got shot. Like, it's so frustrating.
And what's
all of it's frustrating.
I think another thing is, like, we've been doing this a lot more, I think, in the storm, but trying to nail down what the sickness is. And a reason I've been trying to understand it is because, like, the moment, like, if you understood it better, perhaps it would mean more to watch Saeed overcome whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, Robert could not, and Claire, it's questionable and stuff like that, but, like, Saeed can, and that speaks to something in him, and I would just feel better, like, cheering for that if I understood the quality of what he's trying to, like, overcome. Yeah. It doesn't have to be, like, linear 101, you know, like, we talked before about how David Lynch and Twin Peaks impacted Lost, and, like, I think of this as, like, you know, Black Lodge Saeed sort of thing, you know what I mean? Like, that there are, you know, bad doppelganger style storylines that you don't have to explain every single thing for me to understand that it's powerful, but don't land the plane with Saeed. That's,
yeah, sure. I mean, it. Well, and I guess what makes it frustrating is that we go through most of this season, right? We're down to the last four episodes. And Saeed, we're constantly being told by the show that Saeed is sort of gone, and Saeed he's on the dark side now. And then it takes to, you know, last episode when Hurley's like, well, maybe people can come back from it. And then we don't hear anything about that again until the timer on the bomb starts for the second time. And Saeed all of a sudden is cured and is like, Jack, I have to tell you this one thing, and then I'm going to run away with the bomb. So it's like, we don't really get a full explanation of what pulls Saeed back.
Detonator is dead. Constant, I guess.
Right, like, right.
can I read a quote from this interview that Cuse and Lindelof mm-hmm. did with Geoff Johnson? There's a yes. few pips in there, but this is one. I think Lindelof said this one. Saeed's entire season-long arc has basically been, if you tell him that he is evil, you can convince him he is evil. But if you tell him he is good, maybe you can convince him he is good. You basically decided that in the moment of pure instinct, he did something. If he sacrificed his own life in favor of saving other people's lives, that would convey to the audience, this guy was actually a good guy. Sorry, I think that's so stupid. This is me, Joanna.
It's a save the cat situation, but after 5.5 seasons with this guy.
But, like, I already mm-hmm. knew Saeed was a good guy. Like, I had, like, that's the thing is, like, I've seen Saeed go through this struggle with his inner nature, his torture nature, quote unquote, or whatever, his past, etc., in such interesting and nuanced ways. And I didn't need, like, oh, I'll throw my body on the bomb to be the period at the end of that sentence. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, well, and especially when we're not getting a lot of other stuff from Saeed, like, I have to assume, I guess, that the conversation he has with Desmond at the well is what sort of kicks off the change in Saeed.
Yeah.
But then it's just nothing until he decides to jump on the bomb. Like, we don't see any of that process.
He has no one to talk to. There's no characters for him to talk to. And so, you know, Son and Jin at least get to talk to each other very briefly in this episode before they die. But, like, Saeed just makes that, like, one joke at Jack or whatever, and that's it. You know, it's just...
It's not enough to show us that a character is in the process of making a huge change.
Instead of drilling into character on the island, we get all this back and forth, dicking around on Hydra. Can any of you make me feel better about that? Or are we just moving little pieces around while ineffectual Widmore pops up when he needs to?
It finally proves that Charles Widmore and his people are very useless.
Yeah.
In my mind. It's like, what, at this point of Lost, I'm like, wait, why is Charles Widmore still here? Like, he was good as, like, a ominous figure, like, sort of hovering over Desmond's storylines. He was even pretty good when it was, like, him and Ben. But, oh, man. Why does Widmore need to be involved in this?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I almost feel like if Jack didn't jump off the Elizabeth, and then Locke decided to chase him, we would be in the exact same place getting out of the bear cages than if we did any of the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like we didn't need to do any of these things. Like, if Locke would have just shown up with Saeed after they'd, like, rolled up with the Elizabeth and was like, well, you can't kill from me, you can't run from me, let's go take a look at this plane, I would have been like, yeah, sure. Because there's this weird thing, and it's all in capitals of our in our notes because it's that weird. Was it ever ambiguous that Locke was evil? Where it's like, Jack's like, why should I trust you? And he's like, let's go bust them out and I'll be like a smoke monster. And Jack runs up because they're going to trust Jack. They don't trust the smoke monster. I'm like, none of you guys still have trust questions at this point. I feel like the lines have been drawn.
Well, and also we don't like what the purpose of Widmore showing up is to put a character on the island whose sole purpose seems to be to stop the Man in Black from leaving. But we already have several characters who could have been that. Right? Richard could be that character. Ben could have been that character. Like the character that's like, I have to do whatever it is. You know, even if I have to blow up the Ajira plane, I have to keep the Man in Black, the smoke monster, from leaving. So why they needed like Charles Widmore for that is
only there to get Desmond there.
Sure.
Because there's no way Desmond is going back without being kidnapped.
I mean, somebody else could have kidnapped Desmond. Yeah,
Ben could have kidnapped Desmond.
Eloise could have put him in a box and shipped him across the ocean for all we
know. She would have gotten it done like two seasons ago.
Man. Yeah, like she also wouldn't have you know, buried the lead and kept him in a box, in a container.
Well, so the ambiguity of the evilness of Locke is, this goes back to this interview that Damon and Carlton gave to Jeff Jensen and Entertainment Weekly, because like it seems like they think we were supposed to be wondering all season whether or not Locke was evil. Can I read you some choice quotes here? Okay, so why do they do this? Why do they kill Sun and Jin and Saeed? And Damon says, because you know now the show is willing and capable of killing anyone. Did we not already know that? But okay. And then Carlton says, to establish once and for all that the Loch Ness Monster is the true villain of season 6, and quite, sorry, that was definitely Jeff Jensen wrote that because of Loch Ness Monster. Carl DeCuse says there's no ambiguity. He is evil and he has to be stopped. In many ways, the season was structured as a long con on behalf of the Man in Black. Once we revealed that Locke was the monster, we knew the audience would immediately mistrust him. We'd have to spend at least a dozen episodes of Locke trying to convince the audience that he did not have malevolent intention, that all he wanted to do was get off the island, but everything he was doing leading up to that one moment, which was trying to get the candidates in one fell swoop, he knew if he killed just one of them, everyone would know what he was up to. Also, Carlton, he can't physically kill one of them. He can't. Anyway, is that the season you guys remember watching? Being, like, duped by the smoke monster and then going, oh, I guess he is evil. Is that what you watched, Dave?
No, because I've been training people to be looking if Locke's an antagonist for 6 seasons.
I know.
So the second he popped up as an antagonist, I did a little victory dance all over this podcast. I don't think anybody was lost on anybody that's listening to us.
Yeah,
I just don't even think back then I was like, well, maybe.
No, he was always the bad guy. I mean, anybody, he stole John Locke's body.
Like, kill Mr. Echo, you know?
That's some villainous shit. And I think that, I don't know. That's super frustrating. Because it's like, you didn't fool anybody with that one. I mean, I think there's, to a certain extent, you understand how this character, the Man in Black, would be able to still manipulate people. But to the, you know, like the other characters, but to the audience, it's very clear, I think.
Right. So then this is supposed to be some sort of big, oh, I guess he is evil. And I'm like, well, that's not the show I'm watching. I don't know. So, yeah.
Have you been listening to your own score that you've been approving over the shots of Fake Locke? Because you've been telegraphing this as the bad guy for a very long time.
But I will say I've been thinking a lot about how this whole show started. Because it's like a miracle that Lost exists, right? Because like it was a pitch by Lloyd Braun at ABC to do like a live action Survivor. And everyone thought it was a dumb idea. And everyone who was like doing it was just doing it because this one, you know, studio exec is like, I think this is a great idea. So J.J. Abrams is like, well, it's a shitty idea, but he he lets me make Alias, so I have to, like, go along with it. And Damon Lindelof gets hired to, like, do the thing. He's just trying to get hired on Alias, right? Like, he was just trying to impress JJ enough to get hired on Alias is why he agreed to do this thing. Like, none of this should be a show. But aren't we now in the endgame, like, so much closer to that Survivor premise? Like, because all of a sudden, I think, with just five original Oceanic passengers still alive, Claire, Kate, Hurley, Sawyer, and Jack, aren't we like, who's gonna make it? Aren't we suddenly in like death pool territory? You know?
And I think there's a way, like we were just talking about Flock, there's a way to have that character be like what if he in season six on the island he just starts killing candidates, right? Like what if every other episode or something some major character gets killed, but the other characters don't know who it is, but the audience does. I think that builds a better villain. You know, he can still manipulate Jack and whatever, but like, you know, what if he actually did just straight up kill Saeed in like the first episode or the second episode? I think you could have had a better mystery around the villain where the audience is clued in, but the other characters still don't know what to make of the Man in Black, you know?
I think they also might be assuming that the Flash sideways is doing more narrative work for us on the island than it actually is. Because that John Locke is the one I'm questioning whether or not he's the bad guy. Son saying it's him and like seeming to recognize him, like Desmond hitting him with a car. But meanwhile, Locke's living a life where we're kind of happy to see Locke in that state if he's Locke. So it's like that's where the debate is. It's in the science fiction part of your story. It's not on the weird island part of your story that there is any sort of confusion as to who the bad guy was. But I will say the most Locke thing Flock has done since he's been walking around in his body is blow up something with a hatch with an explosive. That's real on brand.
It's a classic move.
You know how like Locke was kind of like a real fucking asshole to Claire a couple episodes ago and then like gaslit groomed her back into compliance?
Remember when he slapped her?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like,
Jesus.
But are we to think that like he actually cares about her in some way, shape, or form? Because he holds her back from like the subway. The subway, submarine.
Don't go in that subway.
Mind the gap, Claire.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that he cares about any of these people. I think it's just like who is useful to me and who is no longer useful to me. Like when everybody goes to get on the sub, it's clear that Jack is not going to be useful to him. And so I think he's willing to sacrifice the people he thinks would go with Jack if the lines were drawn, you know? Whereas with Claire, maybe there's still a chance that Claire is useful to him because she's, you know, like she apologizes, right? Almost immediately.
Well, she's not a candidate anymore, right?
Yeah. So, like, I mean, she's got Flockholm syndrome for sure.
Okay. Beautiful. Good job. Good
work. That was real good.
So like, you know, I guess Claire could be useful. Saeed would have been useful had he not jumped on the bomb. But everybody else is that if it comes down to it, they're not team Smoke Monster. They would be team Jack, I think.
I gotta say, once you see what his long con in this episode is, like from the moment he grabs that watch, like it is, I won't say it's fun. It is interesting to rewatch this episode knowing like what the plan is and watching the backpack switch out.
You mean
that's
the thing to watch when you're rewatching this episode because that's the only thing that's interesting on a second watch?
The Flash side stuff. I think the John and Jack stuff is good. But like something I was wondering is like is if this was why, because a lot of our live watchers pointed out how bizarre it was that Jack jumped into the ocean with his backpack on. So maybe that backpack jump shot was to remind us that Jack has been wearing that backpack since season one. So you would think that he would notice he had the wrong pack on, but no.
This backpack's slightly different weight than before I cocked my gun and set it down. Yeah, also that scene where they all are trying to sneak up on the sub, but they all insist on standing up and cocking their guns at the same time. That made me roll my eyes a little bit. all right. Do we need to touch on any more island things before we jump back into the sideways, which is a lot more fun?
I think it's stupid that Sun and Jin speak so much English to each other in this episode. Like when they're alone and talk about Jian and they're speaking in English.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's stupid.
Yeah. I mean, it is, especially because they could have lampshaded it with Sun saying something who hasn't seen Jian in 3 years.
Yeah, if Jin's like, no, I want to keep practice. I want to show off how much English I've learned or something like that.
Yes, like I learned English for you. That's all he has to say. And I'm like, on board.
Yeah.
Take her camping.
It is irritating. We talked about this, I think, in the storm last week because we knew that Jack was just going to wind up on Hydra Island. But it's annoying for him to jump off the boat, wash ashore, get immediately mortared, grabbed by a lock, and then taken to Hydra anyway. That's stupid. Feels really wasteful. And then, yeah, on island, from that interview with Jeff Jensen, we get Yunjin Kim talking about what Jack Bender did to make her emotional in her death scene. Are you ready? Are you ready for emotional manipulator Jack Bender?
Here we go.
Back in the habit? Okay. She said, right before we started shooting, Jack Bender took me aside and told me about a story that he read a long time ago about this woman who was missing her dead husband and how she had this beach ball that he blew up before he died. And every day she took a little breath from the beach ball. And that really got me right into the emotional core where I need to be to play that scene. Can you imagine that woman taking that breath little by little every day just to feel her husband's presence? Jack Bender! You scamp. Daniel Day Kim also gave an interview to Entertainment Weekly where he talked about how they were all in the tank for so long that some of the crew members peed in there. The end. That's what he had to say. No beach ball anecdote from Daniel Day Kim.
Daniel Day Kim is like, yeah, there's pee in there. I was on Lost. Off to Hawaii.
It should be noted, though, that I believe Daniel Day Kim, in May this year, so recently, he posted something on Twitter about all the time his characters have died. He said, Angel, Lost, The Cave, Spider-Man 2, Arena, Andromeda Strain. I've died so many times on screen. It became a real issue for my kids. It's now one of the primary factors in deciding whether I take a role or not. This trope is one of many for people of color that needs to change. And this is a response to a report that said in the top grossing movies of 2019, only over 25% of the Asian Pacific Islander characters were dead by the end of the movie. So,
ooh.
Same as it ever was.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, let's jump to the white man narrative. Over in the sideways, Jack has once again found something that he thinks he could fix, and there's a roadblock to him fixing it. Joanna, you've been very pro-Jack this season.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in the sideways, we've seen him like endeavor to be a better father. Is this an example of the good Jack wants to fix everything as opposed to the maybe shaky Jack wants to fix everything we've seen him almost cut off Boone's leg with on the island?
Listen, do I like Jack better in this episode than I do usually? Yes. Is he still violating HIPAA in order to get information? Be a little intrusive about his patient's life. Yes. The only excuse I can offer Jack in this sort of privacy violating mode that he's in is that he started to cotton on to the fact that it's very weird that he keeps running into people from his flight.
Yeah.
So there is like something slightly bigger that he is poking his nose into. You know?
That's the Amblin Entertainment sense of wonder just outside the periphery that makes people be able to do creepy things, but be like, no, but there's a mystery.
There's something else going on here, and I don't know what it is. So I'm going to, you know, violate all kinds of laws.
Yeah, I'm going to go to a dentist and ask to see records for a person so I could learn how they were paralyzed. Sure.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
An actual HIPAA violation.
Exactly. I mean, you could just, like, internet sleuth it, right? And, like, backtrack. If you know he went to, like, a dentist for emergency surgery, just, like, look for incidents. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but then how are we going to get Bernard? And isn't it lovely to see Bernard in the sideways?
That's true. How do you feel about Bernard? What do you think he's thinking about? He seems super smiley.
Bernard, to me, seems like he knows something. Like, this to me feels like one of those moments similar to when Sun's being wheeled into the hospital and she's like, it's him. It's like, you know, the fabric between our two realities is very thin. And I don't know, Bernard seems oddly sort of calm and engaged with Jack's journey in a way that's like, is Bernard slightly awake at this point?
I waited.
I knew he was going to end it with waking, and then I knew it was coming next, and I still like jumped out of my chair.
I was nice hovering with the mouse over the button.
I know exactly where this is coming, yeah. And I still like literally jumped.
But yeah, those are definitely the vibes I'm getting from Bernard here. Like at least slightly, you know. Like
he's dozing.
Why is he giving Jack a hard time for flirting with his wife? Like what's going on here?
I do like the that Bernard has now showed up for Jack and sort of helped him along his journey after Rose showed up for John to sort of like help him along his journey. I like our supporting characters who seem happy in all situations and perfectly happy to, you know, help a little bit but not get drawn into everybody's bullshit.
Right. they're not ready to jump all the way in the pool, but they're here to help a little bit.
Bernard will handwrite you a name, but he will not let you peek at the actual file because he doesn't want to go to jail.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He doesn't want to be involved in whatever this nonsense is.
Yeah, let me guess, Jack, you have a bomb. It's always something with
always
you.
Always something with you people.
So we get to see Bernard. Worse for wear Anthony Cooper, which gives Jack an idea that maybe he has the solution, that Locke is punishing himself, which leads to him confronting Locke, which leads to Terry O'Quinn monologue time, which is fantastic, but also answers one of our questions we had earlier on, which is in the sideways, what is the relationship between Locke and his dad? Because as we remember in Island / normal time, the other timeline, him being paralyzed was very closely connected to his father stealing his kidney. Lots of drama there. Here, we learn that it seems like, for all we know, Anthony Cooper was kind of supportive, joined Locke on his first plane ride. Something went wrong. Locke blames himself and has been sort of self-punishing by not allowing himself to you'll hope to get better. Basically the same sort of thing that his fiance.
Helen.
Helen sort of got him to let go of in the sideways earlier, just with like the idea that he doesn't need to be punishing himself by thinking he's gonna feel better. He still, I don't think, has let go of that completely given his conversation with Jack. Neil, what did you think about a sideways Anthony Cooper supportive plain dad?
Well, I mean, I think the Anthony Cooper thing raises a really big question, and I genuinely do not remember the answer to this. I remember if this gets answered by the end of the show, but is it the same Anthony Cooper that Sawyer is looking for? Or is maybe the con man, is this guy who had a good relationship with his son, John, at the end, the same guy who conned Sawyer's parents back in the, you know, 1970s. So, a question to keep an eye on. But I think this is the best stuff in the whole episode. This, you know, Jack's little quest is sort of fraught with, HIPAA violations. And it's great to see Bernard and that stuff. But when you get down to the end, this conversation between Jack and John is the reason why this episode is worth, you know, it is worth watching, I guess, in light of the other stuff. I mean, this if this scene wasn't here, this might be one of those episodes on a rewatch where you could tell people they could skip. Like, yeah, just skip this one. Guess what? Sun and Jin and Sayid don't make it. But this scene at the end is really good stuff. And we get a bunch of, you know, callbacks. Jack says, you know, whatever happened, happened. He tries to encourage John to let it go. We have Jack, you know, admitting that he can't, you know, change. And he's hoping John will change first. I just think it's really fantastic stuff from both actors. And it's really well written. It's just sort of tacked on to an otherwise tough episode.
Yeah, and ending the conversation with "I wish you'd believed me" is a gut punch, and it seems like gets Locke to hesitate for a second, but then he rolls on by. But like, if there are parts of this episode that's well written, it is this part right here.
I do have Terry in like all caps with a lot of Y's in my notes right there. Very good. Mm-hmm. When Jack says, maybe you could go first. Matthew Fox is also incredibly good in all this stuff, I think. The line callback that really got me is when Locke says, what makes you think letting go is so easy? And, you know, it's never been easy. Like, yeah, this Jack and John stuff is deep. And I mean, the best reflection of it on the island, and there's not a lot of great reflection, I think, other than like Jin walking down the hall in the hospital a minutes after we saw him die or whatever, but like is when Jack pushes the smoke monster in the water and says,
John Locke told me.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. That idea of like who survives is like, you know, who remembers you is how you live on immortally and stuff like that. And the fact that like Jack is keeping the flame of John Locke alive makes you invested in at least some of these freaking 815ers living to remember it all.
That's another on-island burn they could have burned a little bit longer, because like Jack meets Smoke Monster is immediately like, fuck off with this, and then like tries to like save his friends. And because of that, it's not really until here that you get how big of a part John Locke still is with Jack, because they sort of waffle with what's most important to Jack depending on what the episode is. If it's the lighthouse, it's like all about him. Why was he like fucking watching me? If he's talking to Sawyer, he has to acknowledge that for Sawyer it's all about like Juliet, so he apologizes for Juliet. And then when he gets to see John Locke, it's this weird fucking mystery smoke monster. So we haven't really gotten to this point of forceful thing like we get before the push, that he's back here as much for John Locke's belief as, you know, he is for anybody else. The way Jack is able to actually pinpoint the important thing based on who he's talking to is a skill that he hasn't had before. He used to be the rock that plots had to run up against, and then the plot would be dictated by how Jack dealt with that unforceable thing. Him as sort of like a passive leader that seems to be making a lot more correct choices makes him feel better in both the sideways and I think on the island in terms of the Joanna ramp of Jack likability. the line on the XY axis.
It's angling up, baby. You have to admit, right?
Indeed.
I mean, he loses some points for promising Sun that he would get her and Jin off the island. Just a few episodes ago, those are words that came out of Jack Shepard's mouth.
Well, as Neil pointed off podcast, he did get them off the island.
Technically. They're no longer on the island. They just didn't make it to another body of land. Sure. I don't think that they would accept that answer from Jack. But I don't know if Jack would argue that anymore. Jack's different. Season one Jack, maybe. Season six Jack is going to
Isn't going to well actually the dead.
Right. Yeah. He's going to feel all of this.
Kate's off the list. It's been driven home a couple times. Just wanted to flag that really quickly. Mm-hmm. We don't know why. So let's just like go through the death rules really quickly though. Right?
Okay.
This idea that, like, the smoke monster can't actively cause the death of the candidates. that they have to like kill themselves, arrange their own deaths. So in pulling the wires out, Sawyer then takes agency over the situation with the bomb, and so it's like his fault that the bomb goes off.
Right.
So this is from Miles McNutt's recap. He says, if you look back, or maybe Alan wrote this, I don't remember. Anyway, if you look back, none of the main characters in Lost were killed by Smokey or the island itself, but rather died by their own hands. The only person on Oceanic Flight 815 who Smokey killed was the pilot, Shannon Boone, Locke, Alex Rousseau, Nikki, Paolo, Anna Lucia, Libby, Michael. They all died in circumstances wherein they either made a conscious choice to sacrifice themselves or where they were killed by the actions of another candidate, the exception being Echo. Is that true? What do we think?
That's from a world where we don't know that Nikki and Paolo were bitten by smoke monster spiders.
I don't think we talked about that in the comm yet, but you can hear some noises on the spiders.
Some clickety-clacks.
The old clickety-clacks when the spiders come surging out of the jungle. So possibly the smoke monster was the spiders. That's a possibility. I don't know. What do you think, Neil? Do those like rules line up to you?
Yeah, sort of. But then, as you mentioned, Echo is the huge cat. It's weird because, like many of the rules that we're learning on Lost, there's usually at least one exception. You know, like whatever happened, except for Desmond. And, you know, the smoke monster doesn't kill any of the candidates except for Mr. Echo. Mr. Echo is a candidate, right?
Yeah, but there's like, I guess there's some thought that like he took himself out of the running by whatever it is he did right before he died.
Didn't finish his church.
Sure. Didn't finish building his church. He's off the list. Yeah, and I don't know. They seem to go to great lengths to try to prove this out, right? That this is some long-form game wherein Jacob brings candidates to the island and then the Man in Black tries to get them to kill themselves or each other. But I don't know. It never felt super significant. I think the more significant thing is whether or not he could kill them if he wanted to, right? And that doesn't seem to be the case. Like he's, you know, he's sort of just unable.
I guess we're going to be like charitable to this. Maybe after Jacob's dead, things are like, that's when the you can't directly kill them rule kicks in or something.
Sure. Because I mean, the water changes in the temple.
Yes.
So what else changes after Jacob dies, you know?
Seems to be an important step was step one, no Jacob, and then all these other things kicked in. But
step three, profit.
Yeah, I do think, you know, we've been narrowing down to almost like Highlander situation where it seems like it's going to have to be one of them because Saeed also sort of echoes what Locke hinted to in the cave. Just like there's a one person job that all these candidates are up for. And Saeed's like, it's going to be you. So we got eyes on our remainers. Well, I guess I'm just yes-anding Joanna's. It feels more like Survivor now. But yes-and, it feels more like Survivor now. And yes-and, why is Kate off the list? Both things to remember moving forward. All right, is it time for some corners?
I think so.
Sure.
All right, Neil, we got a Giacchino corner this week.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. I don't know if I'm giving Giacchino a ton of credit for the music that he plays over the Sun and Jin's final moments, even though to a certain extent that is a very sort of iconic theme. It's called The Last to Know, and that's one that they've used for Sun and Jin since, you know, all the way back in, I think, season one. Title-wise, there is a track on this episode called SS Lost Tanic,
boo,
which is obviously a Titanic reference, which is the, I guess it's what plays over the shots of like the sub filling with water, not necessarily like when Jin and Sun are talking to each other, which I think
is... play the life and death theme, which
yeah,
they've been playing since season one. It plays a lot when people die.
I mean, it's another thing that feels kind of phoned in, with all of the Sun and Jin stuff here at the end.
It's not great. I do have a Pavlovian response to that music.
Sure.
And also there's a lock theme that the sideways lock theme, which is what plays when Helen like comes in and you're like, oh, Helen's here. That's how I always feel when Helen shows up. when Helen hugged Jack, I was like, Helen's hugging Jack. That's nice. So that music also kind of got to me. But
is that the one that's called Flew? No, that's the end. There's one at the end called Flew the Coop.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Giacchino was really on something with some of these.
Our jungle of mystery moment, we sort of discussed who could kill who and when in this system of rules. I wonder if that will come up in future episodes. Who knows? The dumb, elaborate artifact of the week. Although we could go with the sub, I am going to go with the music box. Because I get it. There's supposed to be some sort of connection to Jack and Claire. It's fun watching Jack and Claire connect over and over again, because finally in this one they seem to be doing it correctly. So I'm into all of that. But the Catch a Falling Star magical music box is an extra thing in this episode that is a big question mark right now. Mm-hmm. Why did still missing dead sideways Christian Shepherd want to shunt that box over? We have to figure out. All right, the boon. Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to our boy Saeed, who fell down in lots of different ways and then exploded. And
this
then
is another
floated
one where
down
the,
in multiple pieces.
The sub was another contender here as well.
Just the sub.
The sub definitely fell down.
Kate fell down when she got winged.
Mm-hmm.
Claire kind of fell down when she realized she's being left again.
Yeah. The man in black fell into the ocean.
Oh, yeah. I got pushed into the ocean.
Yeah.
Guess he can swim.
I guess the only one I'm not going to count there is Claire, because I think you're allowed to fall down if you get shot in the shoulder. I'm not going to.
I'm not going to be too picky
about that.
Yeah, we went through all of that and without talking about Kate getting winged in the shoulder, but Kate really only gets winged in the shoulder to get Jack on the sub. Like, that's.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that's all the math. That's why Sawyer gets his head hit. Sawyer gets his head hit, so Jack has to leave. To leave Jin and Sun there. Do you know what I mean? It's the whole
constructing a death sequence that there's no way out of.
To give people moral reasons, you know, give Hurley a reason why he has to leave. He has to leave so he can help Kate, sort of thing.
Lapidus is knocked out and no one cares about him, so that's why we don't know about Lapidus.
Yeah. Lapidus is a question mark.
The John Locke Memorial Coming Back Award goes to Anthony Cooper, who's back, and you wouldn't think you'd be happy to see him, but definitely not annoyed to see him in his sideways manifestation. Mm-hmm. All right, the Abs Eterno Award. This one is a posthumous Abs Eterno Award. Rest in peace to Saeed's tank top, Jim's white t-shirt. Those were consistent winners in Abs Eterno. I don't know who we're left with. I hope Richard comes back.
Yeah, the eternally confident duo. Of Saeed's tank top and Jin's white t-shirt.
They served us very well. Desmond is letting the whole team down by not only being down a well for most of the season, but having a second shirt underneath his top shirt. So we'll see.
Where
I'm gonna need at some point Richard and Desmond to show up fully unbuttoned, ready to fight. Like, that's what I want out of these last couple episodes of Lost.
Yeah. Like on your left, but shirtless.
Right.
I'm into it. The Through the Looking Glass Award, we do get a mirror. It is in said music box, which is maybe why it's in the episode, so we could throw in a mirror. But definitely we get Jack and Claire looking in a music box mirror in the sideways. The Ben's talking, so it's obviously a lie award. Ben is absent, so we're going to give it to Flock, who says we can't be sure. He, meaning Widmore, didn't put more explosives on the plane. It's not safe. We're going to leave the island. I think we have to take the submarine. You don't mean any of that, and it's really obvious you don't mean any of that when you say it. Boo-flock.
Yeah, you're also telling me that Frank, who is an experienced pilot, couldn't do a once-over on the old plane to make sure there's no more bombs?
Yeah, check all the electrical. First of all, the bomb you found was just like attached to a bright red and white wire, so it can't be that hard. All right, the difference corner.
Oh, well, what do you think Widmore was? Was Widmore trying to blow everyone up with that bomb? Just John Locke? Like, what was he trying to do?
I assume just the plane. Like, if anybody tried to take the plane off.
Blow it up.
Mm-hmm. That's the
or
same
maybe
plan.
Maybe it was like a last resort sort of thing. Like, oh, if they do make it to the plane and they try to get away, we can blow them up sort of deal.
They did. That is the exact same Richard Ben Miles plan. So for story efficiency, they decided to not have it be Richard Ben and Miles's bomb. Maybe because they didn't want to be like, and then they found some C4. But yeah, it is kind of weird that Widmore doesn't actually, has never been near the plane. We haven't seen anything that would connect him to having any sort of plane plot at all. But that's the way the season had done.
Maybe it was Zoe. Ugh. It's always Zoe.
Makes sense why it was a shitty bomb job then.
Oh, God.
All right. It's time for the Jungle of Kistery, Joanna.
Oh, hey. The last week, the last recruit. It was a close call. Close call here. Lockjack and Exploding got 6.3% of the vote. I don't know if you remember how high Jack flew through the air in that scene. There we go. Jack and Sawyer on the boat got 26.3% of the vote. There was some close talking. There was
a lot of tension.
Mea culpa for Juliet, all of that. Just a smidge above that is Sideways Kate and Detective Ford. Their precinct banter was flowing, but ACAB. So that means that at the top of the list, maybe some votes for by people who maybe knew what was coming this week. It was Sun and Jin. In English, for some reason, 38.8% of the vote. I'm guessing they're going to win again this week, would be my guess, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like a bag
Jin,
of Jin poo
and camping and dark horses to the top.
And Lindelof and Cuse's doorsteps. Yeah.
Our Charlie Pace.
Oh, wait, did we skip the Spot the Difference corner?
Oh, we did skip the Spot the Difference corner. We have two entrances to Spot the Difference corner. The first one we've talked about a lot is Anthony Cooper, but the other one is Claire with her music box is not like, oh, Catch a Falling Star, I love that song. She's disconnected from it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a little bit different from the Claire we got to know on the island. All right, now it's time for the Memorial Final Words Award, which go to three people. Because it's going to be you, Jack, Saeed, and I love you, both from Sun and Jin. This one is not nearly as fun as it's been in past weeks. The Frank Lapidus Guess We're Not Going to Guam Hackbake Award, also our least fun. It's Dead Hands Underwater, because if you see a body, you know they're dead. And we gotta make sure that that's as tragic as possible, and we're all crying through the commercial.
That scene really hit a lot of the recappers that I was reading, but I was mad that it wasn't even the end of the episode. I was like, they don't even get the big, like, end of the episode moment before the final act break.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anyway, sorry, go ahead.
I agree with you completely, though. There's lots of people not getting their final moments in this episode. All right, it's time for the official podcast check-in. There's only two podcasts left, this being one of them. And the official podcast at this point, they pick up, they've just edit locked the finale. So as far as the progress of Lost, Carlton and Q's Carlton is one person. David and Carlton are done at this point. I'm like, why did that sound weird to me? David and Carlton are done at this point with the storytelling, and the podcast is mostly becoming quotes like Joanna was reading from interviews. They're doing some justification. They're doing a lot of work that we've been doing in the storm. But enjoy this answer, sort of, from the Lost creators.
Not really. This is from Attila Zobazlai from Timisoara, Romania.
I wanted to keep that part in.
Yes. We apologize. I apologize for my inability to pronounce.
We're not the only ones who are really bad at
that. Hi, David and Carlton. Do the whispers, the ghosts who can't move on, take orders from the man in black? Because Michael sent Hurley and Jack to talk to Unlock, which was what Unlock wanted. And back in season 3, when Locke was looking for Jacob's cabin, Horace told him in a dream that Jacob has been waiting for him a really long time. But then he told him how to find Jacob. Yet it wasn't Jacob in the cabin, but Christian, a.k.a. the man in black. Thanks, guys. I love the show.
If the answer is, do the whispers work for the man in black? I think the answer is no. Everything's right. Subject to interpretation, but I don't think it was ever our intention that Michael was telling Hurley to go talk to Locke. In fact, Hurley confides to Jack, "This was my idea. I think we should go talk to him. All Michael says is, if you go and you blow up that plane, more people are going to get killed. I think that we can say it is not our intention that there is a link between the Whispers, or the Island Dead, as it were, and the Man in Black. Although the Man in Black has presented himself as the Dead in some cases, one of the cool things that we think, as a result of Locke admitting to Jack that he was taking on the guise of his dead father, is, does that mean that every time we've ever seen a dead person on the island, it was the monster? Or are we supposed to question, are we supposed to look at that through the prism now of, it could have been? And then the question just becomes, was that person appearing to someone who normally has the ability to see the dead? Like Mr. Echo, for example, didn't ever seem to ever see dead people, but he did see Yemi. So maybe that would be a Man in Black manifestation. But Hurley,
interesting.
Hurley, who has seen the dead on a regular basis, if he sees Isabella, Richard's wife, I think it's probably safe to bet that's Isabella.
That's correct. Because right? He has, yes, because he has a special ability.
That's good logic.
It is good logic, and it just requires a more complex understanding than just a simple rule that all people who are dead on the show are manifestations of the Man in Black, which is too simple.
Do I forget part of the last season of Game of Thrones where we were confused about the rules? Because it feels like very specific to Lost that we're this close to the end and we're still like, what are the rules?
Yeah, none of those rules explain Ben's mom.
Yeah,
on the island.
None of those ghost, explain Ben's mom.
Ghost Ben's mom. Waiting for that one.
Kate's horse.
Yeah, there's lots of things that Wet Harper. What was that?
Wet Harper.
We remember you, Wet Harper. We're the the Hurley of podcasts remembers Wet Harper.
We're the number one Wet Harper podcast.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for this week's Calm. We'll be back for The Storm right after this.
This episode of The Storm is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, I have a question for you. Is there something, perhaps the mass extermination of some of your favorite TV characters, interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I know beyond the frustrations of our Lost Life Watch, I'm having some issues with the COVID yo-yo that we currently find ourselves in. Are we masking? Are we staying home? What are we doing? It's a lot. It's a lot to tackle. BetterHelp is here to assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. And it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional therapy done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. Also, like I said, are we going outside? Unclear. This service is also available for clients worldwide.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy or in the old times. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if you need to. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and financial aid is available. Because BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
If you'd like to get more information, you can visit their website and read testimonials that are posted daily, like this one for a counselor named Jennifer. This reviewer says, "She's fantastic. In only 4 sessions of just venting and talking about my life, she has made me feel more relaxed on a day-to-day basis, and how understanding she is. It's phenomenal." You can visit betterhelp.com/storm. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Once again, that is betterhelp.com/storm.
Now is the time on the podcast where we'd like to thank our $10 level or above Patreon subscribers. Once upon a time, they were called the Small Council. Now we call them candidates. We're going to start with some newcomers, and we got a bunch of new folks this week. Hello. So I want to thank George O'Brien, Mike Rosado, Danielle Pierce, Rachel Warren, Kyle Renner, Nora Gant, Randy Blash, Brittany Whimsy Riot, Sam Cohen, Kate Whitney, Amber Vickers, Patricia Delaney, Carrie King, Anissa Ford, Erland Holbeck, Angela Funker, Christopher Holmquist. I feel like I found myself in a little Nordic corner of this. Marissa Zane, Ben Brown, and Otto Nim. Thank you all so much.
And I would like to add to those thanks the following candidates: Carol Blaine, Natalie Smith, Ruby Durham, Lauren Bree, Christopher Bates, Aubrey Iyer, Josh Brown, Victoria Stout, Kathy Schauberg, Grace Brown, A. Will, Peter Henderson, Tobias Wolf, Matt Campbell, Ellen Rabin, Katie Truchon, Liz Roller, Billy Bosky, James Cooper, and John Lillestrom. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Samantha O'Leary, Brennig Hayden, Luke, Roberto Alonso Villarreal, Kevin Costello, Patrick Kelly, Angela Travis, Kurt Klein, Matthew Keen, Karen Frost Arnold, Fanny Martin, Ali Oman, Brad Mashenko, Vanessa Marshall, Addison Lee, Elisa Ruoff, Jenny Malone, David Woodley, Jackie Barnes, and Danette. Thank you all so very much for being candidates and joining us on this journey.
And we're back in the store!
Pew pew! Pew!
This is the part we need to be high energy, so it's really important. Wake me up! Wake me up inside!
Wake me up inside! Bernard, is Bernard awake?
I don't think so. It just seems like he's super happy and smiley, so I teed you up there because I needed to play the sound cue.
This is another one that I genuinely just don't remember the answer. So I spent the entire scene being like, is Bernard awake in the sideways? But I guess maybe not.
I think if he was like, if they wanted us to know for sure he was awake, we would at some point see him and Rose together. But we don't, so I feel like he's another side character.
Bernard and Rose are in the church?
They are.
Okay, good.
Okay, that's good. So maybe it has happened for them. I don't know. That means like one of them was close to death. I think that
Hurley, because you know we know that Hurley's out there doing this stuff. I like to think because he employs Rose that he woke Rose up and was like, "Go to the dentist.
Go to the dentist. It's our new dental plan. It'll be great for you."
Or like Hurley's like, "Hey Rose, our dental plan is changing, so you're going to want to go get your cleaning now."
I've heard Dr. Nadler is good.
I've been having real problems with patient HIPAA security, and I want you to check for leaks.
Although, in the sideways, they're married already, right?
Oh, that's right. Never mind.
So what
woke them up if not each other?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it definitely wasn't like meeting
Vincent.
Jack.
Vincent.
Sideways heaven, Vincent.
Okay. So Hurley needs to go to Walt. Never mind. Anyway, Walt's not on the sideways because he's going to live forever. Okay. Mass killings. They're not just for meat socks anymore. Something that I wrote in my notes. I don't know why they need to go in the storm. But this is
like, because we killed all of them, at the end of last week, and this week it's just like, and the others stayed back.
Well, but they're thinning out the herd, right? One of my favorite things is one of the recappers is like, and Claire is still alive. That's a surprise. It's true. If you ask me at the beginning of Lost, which of these five are going into the finale alive, I would not put Claire on the list. But you know. So Damon says in this interview, like, we need to do this in order to make you know that we could kill anyone at any time. The only death left is Jack.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So couldn't they have killed one of these characters in the penultimate? Like, I'm just saying,
couldn't
spread
they have
it
taken
out a
their
bit.
Time? Yeah.
Spread it out a little bit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, on top of the fact that they are killing the majority of their remaining characters of color, I think that's like issue one. But issue two is like, they really seem to rush into killing Saeed and Sun and Jin all of a sudden in the sub. Whereas like they could have spread that out over the course of the season and I don't know if it would have made it better, especially if they would have still only killed the same people, but it probably would have not been quite the shocking. And you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's clearly designed to shock us, but not, it didn't shock people in the right way. Like I don't know.
The more shocking thing is if you are binging this, you immediately go into something completely different. Like, right. Not only is there not time here to talk about, you know, like Jin and Sun, but there won't be time.
Well, so our guest next week is Alan Sepinwall, and he and I recorded our conversation about this like a couple months ago, actually. And so I hadn't been watching episodes quite in order. And he's like, well, what really bummed people out about Across the Sea is that we just had the submarine thing, and we had some questions like whether Frank was going to survive. Some people thought maybe Jim was going to survive and all sort of stuff like that. And it's like, and then it's like, meanwhile, back in ye olden times.
Alice and Janney is shipwrecked.
Why is Alice and Janney even here? That's the question.
But something that we talked about a little bit off air, but I wanted to bring it up on air too, is this idea. I told the guys that I was watching an old episode of Designing Women, met MC Gainey showed up, and I was like, hey, why isn't Tom Friendly in the final season? Why isn't he in the Flash sideways? So I guess the question I might ask is like, is there anyone who doesn't show up in the Flash side, anyone else who doesn't show up in the Flash sideways that you feel like really should be there?
Mm-hmm. There is one for me, which is Colleen, played by Paula Malcolmson. What a terrible throwaway character she ended up being. And I think that they could have used the sideways to recontextualize, not necessarily recontextualize the characters we had already met, but like to bring those actors back in a fun way. Like, I don't know. And maybe it's because over the course of this rewatch, I had actually watched Deadwood and am now like a huge fan of Paul Malcolmson.
Maybe in the sideways, John Hawkes and Paul Malcolmson, the two Deadwood kids, could be married to each other.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, fucking Dogen gets to be in the sideways. So I can't some of the, you know, early, I mean, the obvious answer is it's TV production and it was based on who was available.
I would say it's kind of amazing. We don't have a lots of ADR like Easter eggs, like, cause that would be my response if I was like producing this television show, like, you know, Kate speeds around like a corner and you hear a car crash and someone goes, damn it, Pickett, you know, like something like that. Like, just fucking throw it in there. Like, we're rewatching
my
the show.
My name is B, a clue. B, a clue. Wow, remember?
Abaddon.
Abaddon. Throw him Goodwin. In there.
Goodwin.
Goodwin, Harper.
I mean, we still haven't seen Richard. I don't think we get Richard's
no,
on
Richard.
The sideways, right?
Yeah, no Richard.
That I feel like if we poll the listeners at the end, the call me's, Richard might be the person that they would have wanted to
see
in the sideways.
Carl.
There's no Carl in the sideways.
We have to get to the concert right now.
Oh my god, I would love a little like Dawson's Creek episode with Alex and Carl.
Or like while Kate's fleeing, she runs over someone and it's Claire's shitty boyfriend who got her pregnant
Tom,
and then bailed on her.
Hate that guy.
The sideways has actually got me thinking about Lost 2 again.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the initial plan I had for this entire thing is, wouldn't it be great if you watched a whole season of something and then realized it was Lost 2?
Right.
Like, the only way sort of to do it, I think, if we were to pitch like a Lost 2, is you say it's, you lie to everybody through your teeth the first season. You're like, this is an anthology series about
this is called
like,
The Good Place.
Yeah, this is an anthology series about like the love between, you know, parents or like some sort of like bullshit thing. And so each episode you tell like a different story and then like slowly things like the sideways start like eking in. And then at the end of the first season, you're like, it wasn't an anthology series. It was a bunch of stories that are leading to the island. Here we go.
And you're like, oh my God, it's really Ji-Yun.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy shit, it's Clementine.
Well, it's like, yeah, all the kids were the kids you thought they were. And then like in the final, like the penultimate episode of the season, Richard Alpert shows up to apologize. And then we kick off Lost Season 2, starring Nestor Carbonell.
And Walt is there, but he's played by Lieutenant Daniels from The Wire.
I think.
I also think Hurley has to be there. I think we could get Jorge back for this.
I think Walt can should also be, we should see multiple Walts. I think Walt is the Rick Sanchez Loki variant.
He's
of
the
this,
Loki variant. Okay. Of
the infinite Walts.
Well, because you don't want to do the black versus white, like Walts and Hurley accidentally create another smoke monster, because that's like no fun. You want them to have a unique problem. And so maybe you give them like a Franklin Richards problem where it's just like future Walts is like, wait a minute. I've seen the end, the episode of Lost, and I know things. No?
He becomes Walt the Conqueror.
I mean, the important thing is we don't have to outline more than the first season, because what we've learned is television is a collaborative medium. So I'm just saying, we just do our own Flash sideways for... We don't even have to do 23 episodes, just like 6 episodes. Let's do it, guys. Let's write the outline.
All right, yeah. Do you want to hear some storm emails?
Let's.
This comes from Vaughn. It's titled Jack Christian Church Conversation. Hello, wonderful host. I've started to write half a dozen emails and always end up deleting them because I don't think they really add a value. But I wanted to send a message about the church conversation in the finale between Jack and Christian after it was brought up late in this week's podcast episode. I think that conversation may be the best scene of Lost and probably one of the best scenes of any show, period. One of the reasons I think this is because of the theme of terrible fathers throughout the show, yes. At the end, we see this truly emotional moment between a father and a son, and a father gets to be their comfort, a comfort to their child during traumatic realization. As a parent now, I think I appreciate this scene even more than I did any time I have rewatched. Christian also delivers the very powerful line when Jack asks if everyone in the church is dead too, and Christian responds with a comforting smile and everyone dies sometimes, kiddo. As a parent, it reminds me of all the times when you could tell your child that you've been there before and it's going to be okay. They may not believe you in the moment, but a hug and a smile starts the process of healing. As a personal aside, shortly after Lost went off the air, I ended up in a routine knee surgery in 2013. There were some immediate complications, and I ended up dying for 2.5 minutes.
Whoa.
I didn't have a flash of an afterlife like Desmond. This moment really cemented my status as an atheist, but after this happened... I found myself coming back to this scene from time to time to remember that we all die sometimes, kiddo, and it comforts me like it does Jack all over again. Anyhow, I realize you probably get a ton of emails, so I'm sure this won't make it to the show or even get a reply, but that's okay. Just wanted to share. If you do find the time to read and have time to respond, I'd love to hear if this scene impacted any of you, as it has me. Thanks for all you do, Vaughn. So I just want to say really quickly to Vaughn, like, I think after I read this email from Vaughn, I went and watched the scene, and it's a scene that I just watch sometimes. I just queue it up on YouTube and watch it because it reminds me that I am a feeling human being on this planet. Neil?
Mm-hmm.
Christian, yeah. In the church?
No, I mean, I don't understand how Vaughn thought that this wouldn't make the show with a near-death experience in there. But yeah, no, it's a great scene. I think... You know, I keep remembering the bonus episode we did around the anniversary last year. And you can watch the finale, especially those church scenes at the end, out of context. And still, I think it's one of the things that makes Lost such a powerful and lasting show is that all of the emotion of 6 seasons of watching Jack's arc come flooding back. Even if you're just watching that one scene out of context. And I think that is, you know, it's a testament to the work that they did across the entire show, just as much as it is a testament to how well written that scene is. And I think that that was one of the, you know, it's one of the things that made Lost, that has made Lost a great show to rewatch and podcast, is that so much great work went into it. And even in a week like this, where we're talking about an episode in which Lost does several of its worst things.
Yeah.
We can still acknowledge that they did some great stuff all the way to the end. The very last scene is one of the best scenes of the show. So, that's a great email. Thanks, Vaughn. Glad you made it through your knee surgery. That's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
Dave, do you have any response to that email?
I'll yes and everybody. And, but especially that thing that Neil said at the end, where it's like, if you stick the landing like that, where it feels like not only is it the scene that you needed, but it's a thesis for the show that makes the show better, it's pretty fantastic. So not only does it really work as a character moment, maybe less so for me than for Vaughn, mostly because of the dad angle is something that I have to, you know, just hypothesize about.
Mm-hmm.
But for even from like a screenwriting or a television scripting angle, being able to land the show happens in the church. It doesn't happen with the light cork. And that's what makes it like absolutely phenomenal.
It's true. I will say we'll be rewatching it soon, but like the Jack Hurley handoff is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the cork moment, but it is the like passing the torch moment that is very strong on Island. We got this other email from Sam. Dear Dave, Joanna, and Neil, I've been listening since the show was just an extra in the Fitwar feed. I was excited when you pivoted to being a Lost Rewatch podcast, as I had never watched before. I started week to week with you, but quickly couldn't stop myself and finished my binge in lockdown last year. I was one of the people who couldn't really stand Jack and his daddy issues for the longest time, and it wasn't until the final episode where Jack talks with Christian when I understood why. I have long had a terrible relationship with my mom, and despite her changing for the better over the last few years, I wasn't able to let go of the pain and resentment I held onto. Hearing Christian talk to Jack about letting go and moving on has been instrumental in turning my view on our relationship around. I'm currently living with my parents for a short time after moving cities, which I never would have done a couple years ago. I wouldn't have started my Lost journey without this podcast, and my life is infinitely better as a result. So I really want to thank you all. I'm excited for what comes next. Sam Wanganui from New Zealand. So
aww. That's pretty badass. Just to be involved in that chain that starts with you deciding to better yourself and ends with you bettering yourself is fantastic.
I think it is. I mean, it like we roll our eyes at some of the like bad dad Olympics. Oh, and another person that isn't in the sideways that should be is Cheech, right? But like we roll our eyes.
Although he is there, he's the star child.
That's true. All Davids. But like we roll our eyes a bit at like, you know, when Lost gets a little heavy handed with the bad dad Olympic stuff, but like. It really is. That really is just such an elemental thing. And it really can make you feel things. A lot of people have at least some measure of an issue with their folks. So, yeah. Neil, did you have a response to that?
No, I think that's lovely. I like it.
I have one last email from Annalisa. Pew, pew, pew. High energy. All right. I listened to you since the Game of Thrones days, but took a long break from listening during the height of the pandemic. Even Fake Disaster and Survival Entertainment was too much at the time. In the last few months, however, I've caught up on Lost and finally finished my first watch through, thanks to your podcast. I can hardly believe I'm caught up to the real time with you. It's like we've met in the sideways. As a first-time watcher who listened to The Storm in every episode, I enjoyed two layers of mystery. What the frack is going on in the show, and what are my best friends Joanna, Neil, and Dave even talking about? I wanted to offer my first-time watcher thoughts about the finale. I loved it. I expected the finale to be disappointing, but when the gang is all back together and they found each other and remembered together, and they're in the church, I wept and wept on a Tuesday morning. Thematically, I like the idea. For a lot of sappy reasons, I like the idea for all of us existing and connecting in multiple realms, spiritual, through time, what have you. I love the theme of letting go of control and going where the universe takes you. Jack was previously a fave of mine, but now I think it's because we have the same control issues. When the characters wake up and then meet in the church, they all have immense joy on their faces in those moments of connection. Despite what they had gone through and their ever-changing relationships with each other, people they shot and punched and hated and fought with, they now had genuine joy in seeing and being reconnected with. It was like they could release the past and other versions of themselves and the BS tension and fights because they recognized how small that all was in the scope of moving on together. Throughout the show, the strongest part of it for me was the connection between characters, and at the end, seeing the healing and acceptance between all these characters was just what I needed as a viewer. They forgave, found joy, survived chaos, wanted to make things better, and most importantly, lived an experience of independence, which I find the most beautiful of all. Oh my god, plus Vincent lying by Jack at the end. I was just weeping. Thank you all for taking us through this pandemic thus far, bringing us this moment. Maybe we'll all get to walk together into whatever's next. Cheers, Annalisa. Alyssa also says that she got West Nile virus.
Oh, no.
So she says, maybe add wear bug spray to your cautions of don't fall down. Don't fall down. Don't tighten up. Please wear bug spray. So knee surgery in West Nile. Guys, we're doing fine. Damn. Everyone.
We all made it.
Yeah, everyone's making it through.
No, you know what I love about this one is I'm remembering back to one of, it might have been the first episode where we first jumped into the storm.
Yeah.
And Dave just unfurls this monologue. And you can hear Joanna and my brains just break because it's some like deep season six stuff.
He's like the Venezetti, the equation, right? He started with the Venezetti equation.
I think that was an important question to start with.
I can only imagine how difficult some of the storm stuff would have been to follow if you were Call Me listening to the storm. Some of it's nonsense.
I'm all for it. I just have one question in response for, I guess, Neil. Which is, Neil, it's been 2 years. In terms of, you know, finales that still work, do you think Drogon's still flying around Westeros with Daenerys' body in his little claw?
No, he takes her back to, whatchamacallit?
The Light Court.
Stone people
and
are.
And throws her in the Light Court.
He takes her back to...
And he's like, oh no, it was the muddy water.
What's the city where the Targaryens are from? Well, I guess I should really...
Valyria.
Yeah, it takes her back to Valyria, puts her in the fire, and she is reborn, and that's the sequel. After the spinoffs don't work out, they'll somehow convince Emilia Clarke with, I assume, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to come back.
just pick that one right back up.
Yep. Just what if Daenerys isn't dead?
How do you feel like Bran is doing ruling Westeros?
They should put Tyrion in the history books. He seems kind of important. That's what he should be doing. The finale of this podcast is going to be more of a heft than I think Game of Thrones was. Because not at all like Anna and Vaughn, but we've all been through the global pandemic together while we've watched these characters get stranded on Lost. And then at the end of the show, instead of a storm, we're gonna have to be like, see you all in the church later, and then we're all gonna real cry. It's gonna be a thing.
Sure. I mean, it's wild to think that we chose this before the pandemic.
And like, just blindly we're like, all six seasons of Lost. One a week.
That's the one. But
my favorite is that someone was like, a bunch of people are like, bet you won't finish, Joanna. Well, you know what? Bet I did. You disbelievers.
Yeah. Take that. You think we're not professionals of the rewatch podcast game? Think again.
Yeah, there were points along the pandemic where I wasn't sure that society would survive.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I was 100% sure we were finishing Lost.
They're like, well, there's lockdown, but hey, we get to do lockdown. They're like, well, there's racial justice protests, but oh, God, the Echo episode. There's been elections. We've really been through the ringer, just like the characters.
Yep.
Wild
stuff.
I need Vincent to lie down next to me at the end of this thing to make me feel better.
Aw, Vincent. Yeah. I feel like that's one of the things about the finale that I sort of emotionally block out of my mind. But then whenever I see it, it's crushing when Vincent comes and lays down next to Jack. Like, I always forget that that's a thing. Until it shows up on screen, and then it's just the floodgates are open.
Good. It's good to use a dog to get out.
Yep. Vincent was a good boy.
Vincent all the was way a to good the boy. End. So, despite all the island talk and the finale talk, we're actually not going to be rejoining our Losties next week. Neil, what's up next?
Well, instead of finding some sort of closure for the three main characters who were unceremoniously killed off in this last episode, we are going to learn about the history of Jacob and the Man in Black and their mother in Across the Sea. It is going to be a wild time. I would say that other than the finale, Across the Sea is probably going to be the wildest of the live watches that we've done. because, I don't know, we have some commies, and I don't know if they have any idea what the hell is about to hit them. And it's going to be so much fun. I hope they all show up on Saturday night. And if you have any influence over any of the commies in our Slack, make sure to nudge them. Don't tell them what's going to happen. Just nudge them to keep their Saturday evening clear this week.
Across the sea and like... And I feel like throughout the episode, they're going to be like, oh, surely now they're going to cut back to...
Yeah, we're going to go back to the island now.
Surely there's going to be some... Island? Where is Jack? I mean, people are going to miss Jack. It's going to be so wild.
Titus Welliver is really good. We'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't dislike the episode. It's just bad for where it is.
Yeah.
It's just a wild left turn.
Like, this could have started... This could have been... Cersei and the Frog Lady just start like a fucking season with a flashback. That's fine with me.
Hey, it's my favorite rock and roll band, Cersei and the Frog Lady.
Cersei and the Frog Lady. I think we got our Game of Thrones references in this week for sure. So until next week, when we go back in time and across the sea, where could people find your work online? We'll start this week with Neil Miller.
You can always get me at filmschoolrejects.com, which recently got a little facelift. That's something I've been working on for the entire pandemic.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Finally, my pandemic project is done. You can also get me on Twitter at Rejects. That One Perfect Shot is also a good one. Don't forget to follow our show at Storm Podcast. You're going to want to be in on the final Kistery polls and all of the other fun updates that we have coming for you.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on Vanity Fair. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. This week on Vanity Fair, I've got something on Lord of the Rings. In fact, speaking of fantasy franchises, that you can read.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E, but probably like it's not great. If you're following Storm Podcast, that's probably where the content is. You can listen to me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. It's a podcast about pop culture and stuff. We talked about Green Knight and Jungle Cruise. And Katie and Patches asked me to explain what was happening with Scarlett Johansson and Disney to them. If any of that is interested to you, you could find them anywhere podcasts are found, wherever you found this, probably. And I will also be here for the rest of August, maybe a couple weeks in September, reminding you, don't fall down, wear your bug spray, don't get involved in white guys' posthumous bullshit.